Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Baudoux.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
In this episode about life as a digital nomad, we're excited to welcome a special guest as our interviewee today. It's Katie Schober, and she is a German to English translator and a Speaking of Translation listener. Thank you, Katie. So in June of 2018, Katie and her husband sold or donated most of the contents of the house that they had in Boston. They shipped some items to Katie's mother's house in St. Louis, and they hit the road as digital nomads. I know she's living the dream, people. So, we're here to hear more about that. So Katie's husband's originally from Austria, and he's a software consultant, and he can also work remotely. And Katie grew up in the U.S., and her specialization, or she focuses on German to English translation of historical texts and genealogy, which is also very cool. And we're looking forward to hearing how this big adventure in living and working on the road is going. Katie is also blogging about her experiences at, and you can correct me, Katie, if I pronounce this wrong, A Cultural Apiece.
A Culture Apiece.
So like a one culture apiece. Per person. Okay.
Exactly.
And A Culture, A-C-U-L-T-U-R-E-A-P-I-E-C-E.com. And we're going to put that in the show notes. And welcome, Katie.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I've been listening to the podcast for years now, so I'm very excited to get to be a guest on it.
Awesome. So this is Corinne. Before we dive into the episode, we wanted to remind you that if you haven't yet picked up a copy of Eve's book, Maintaining Your Second Language, it is a great resource for anyone who wants or needs to maintain their skills in their non-native language, which is basically anyone who would listen to this podcast.
Thank you.
Maintaining Your Second Language has multiple five-star reviews online, and one reviewer called it chock full of practical tips to help you achieve your language goals. And for any of our listeners in the San Diego, California area, we wanted to let you know that our longtime friend and colleague, Marianne Reiner, English to French translator, has recently opened an independent bookstore called Run for Cover Bookstore. It is your locally owned and operated source for great books, including classics, new releases, and an extensive section of children's books. And they also have great gifts for the book lovers in your life, or for you. Why not? Run for Cover Bookstore has a great lineup of in-person events such as a children's story time every Tuesday and readings and book signings by authors. You can find Run for Cover Bookstore right in San Diego at 4912 Voltaire Street or online at runforcoverbookstore.com. Okay, Eve, over to you.
Katie, I thought we'd start off by asking you to tell our listeners how you arrived at the decision to take off on your digital nomad adventure. So what made you and your husband decide to do it? And were you both equally enthusiastic?
Yes, we actually were both very excited. We decided about a year ago in January of 2018. And by that time, we'd been living in Boston for about 4 years already. And as you know, Boston can be very expensive. So we kind of figured since we both have jobs where we can work from anywhere, mm-hmm. and we had nothing really tying us down to Boston. We have no kids. We didn't have family there. Why not explore the country? So I had actually had the idea a while back, but I never thought my husband would go for it. So when he was the one who suggested it last January, and when he suggested it, I was thinking to myself, is he serious? Is this really going to happen? And I made him promise that, you know, we could really do it. And so when our lease was up that June, we left Boston.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Awesome.
So I'm curious about the lease, actually. Did you had a lease and you didn't own your house? So
that
was a
little. No, we had just rented in Boston. we would need a lot more money to own something. So we were renting from year to year. So it wasn't too hard to leave, you know, a rented apartment behind.
Okay, right, as opposed to having to sell the house and all that kind of stuff.
Right, yeah, we had it pretty easy.
But another, I guess, I wonder if the listeners, but another thing, I suppose, if you owned your house and you wanted to get some cash up and you didn't need a house to come back to, you could sell your house and take some of the money.
That's true. Yeah. So, that's yeah. one way to do yeah. it.
Exactly. It's interesting to know, you know, how you did that. So, okay, great. Thanks.
Cool. Yeah, and I'll chime in. This is Corinne. That the year after my husband and I got married, which was in 2000, we too lived in Boston. There must be something Boston that inspires people to hit the road.
We did like it. It is a nice city. Yeah.
Right. It is a lovely city. And we did just a nomad year. We quit our jobs and saved up enough money to travel for a year. And we did own a house at the time. And we were fortunately able to rent it to some friends who rented it for reduced rent in exchange for taking care of our cats and letting us leave our stuff in the house. So just for anybody who's interested in, you know, the different logistical arrangements, I know when Eve went to France for 5 months, you just left your house empty, right? Which is another option.
It was kind of nerve-wracking. I don't know if I do that again. It was fine. But every night, not every night, but when I came home, I realized there was some stress from that. And I was like, okay, no water damage. My house hasn't burned down. But it worked and nothing happened.
Yeah. But we had a nice middle of the road option where these friends paid us some rent, but not market rate rent. And most of all, they took care of our cats, but also, you know, let us leave our stuff there.
It's a good deal. Yeah.
Yeah. So Katie, why don't you give us an overview? I know today you're talking to us from a very exciting place, St. Louis.
Very, very exotic, yes.
Right. Where every digital nomad dreams of going.
Exactly.
The wilds of St. Louis. Can you give us an overview of where you went so far? So you left in June, so you're about, 6 months into it or so?
Exactly.
Yeah. So where you've gone so far, what kind of places you've stayed in, and what are your plans for the rest of the time? And I was also wondering if you can tell us that. Are you planning on going for a year indefinitely until you get sick of it or of each other? Like, what's the time frame here? Talk to us a little bit about itinerary.
Yeah, to answer that question first, we're just kind of going as we feel like it. Originally, we were planning on doing a year, but we had a change of plans over Christmas. So let me back up and I'll tell you how we started in June. We left Boston and we were planning to go to Denver, actually, out by you two. Mm-hmm. And
is this in a car? How do you leave Boston?
No.
In a car?
So we were very lucky and we had the Southwest Companion Pass. And for those of you who don't know what that is, if you have enough points with Southwest, you can have
the
a
US
companion
airline.
Pass.
For some of our listeners, it's the airline company in the US.
Exactly, yeah. So we were able to have it so that whenever I flew anywhere, my husband could fly with me for free.
Oh, okay.
So that was very lucky. And we thought, you only get it for a year. So we thought, while we have this great companion pass deal, we have to take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And so we used Southwest to fly from Boston to Denver.
Great.
Right. But before, so we were planning on staying in Airbnbs in each location. And we wanted to do that because, you know, Airbnbs are furnished. They have utensils. We wouldn't really need to buy anything. Mm-hmm. But the complicated part was they don't always work out with the exact dates you need because they're not always available.
Right.
So
even if they for the starting date, it might be full in the middle or something because they already
exactly
have
okay. Right. So we wanted to go to Denver. We found a great Airbnb in Denver, but it wasn't available until about 2 weeks after we had to move out of our apartment in Boston. So we didn't really know exactly what to do for those 2 weeks. But luckily, I had some family up in Rockport, Massachusetts, which is a beach town about an hour north of Boston. So that was our official first stop. We got to stay with my family, and we worked from their house, and we went to the beach before and after work. So it was a wonderful way, wonderful way to start the year. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then we headed to Denver, and that was great. One of my best friends lives in Denver, so she just took us right under her wing and showed us the town and took us on mountain excursions. And, you know, I really didn't know. We haven't lived together since we were 18 in St. Louis in high school, so I didn't know would I be disrupting her life. You know, she has her own life now with her own friends, and I didn't want to, you know, impose too much, but she and her husband just included us in everything and really made us feel welcome. So Denver was a lot of fun. And then after that, we wanted to go to San Diego, but San Diego is another very expensive city. And we could not find an Airbnb for the amount of money that we wanted to be paying. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to push San Diego back about a month and a half when the prices were cheaper, mm-hmm. and to go somewhere else in between. Yeah. So it was, I'm a very big planner. So I mean, as many translators know, yeah. or most of us are perfectionists and planners. So this year is definitely a challenge for my spontaneity. Right.
Well, I like that idea too, that, I mean, just so that people don't overextend themselves and you can keep doing it, you have an idea, whatever it is in your head, like, okay, our budget is X and we can't go over that. And if we do, then we need to look at a different option like you did. So that's a good idea. You know, that's interesting for planning too.
Right.
Right. Exactly. We had a budget we wanted to stick to for the Airbnbs and we didn't do anything over that. Mm-hmm. And it actually ended up, because we couldn't go to San Diego, we found another city called Bend, Oregon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I had never heard of it before, but
Oregon.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It was so beautiful. We ended up there because my husband's manager lives there and he kept telling us how beautiful it was. And it was honestly my favorite place we've been on our year so far. It was just this quaint little town, like, with a river running through and mountains. And we both love nature. We both love hiking. So it was just a great fit for us.
It sounds really neat. Like you said, you like planning, but you are flexible. So it opens you up to opportunities you might not have had otherwise. So that's neat too.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying to be flexible. Sorry.
I'm learning to be flexible. Yeah.
And I should say too, the reason I made the joke about, you know, are you going to stay on the road until you get sick of it or of each other, is because I think anyone who has done this would attest, as much as you love the other person you're with, it's an extremely intense experience to do that kind of thing with only one other person you know. So for example,
it really is. Yes.
When my husband and I did our nomad year, we only knew each other for a year before we got married, and we had never been on an airplane together before we bought one-way tickets to Singapore to go to the nomad year. And I remember my dad said to me, well, you'll find out really quickly whether you married the right person. And I think in a sense, there's some truth to that, that I thought, like, you know, either this will be kind of a flame out. I mean, we could do a whole other episode on the interpersonal aspects of it. You know, this either this will go south really quickly, or we'll find out that we were meant to be together. And, you know, that was 20 years ago and we're still together. Okay. But I just think it's true that it's a very intense experience, you know, only having one other person, like, whose name you know, in the vicinity. So anyway.
Right. I definitely agree. And it really was a getting used to process there with, you know, our first couple of weeks in Denver. You know, we're eating breakfast together. We're going to work together. We're eating lunch together. You kind of realize there's not as much to say exactly because you're experiencing the exact same day. So, and the two of us aren't very philosophical. So we don't really enjoy, you know, talking about, like, theories of the world or anything like that. So it did take some getting used to for that part. Definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then after Oregon, we were able to go to San Diego. The prices dropped a little bit in November and December. That was definitely interesting. I'd never been anywhere warm at Christmas time. So it was very weird to see all the Christmas decorations and the Christmas lights and the 70-degree weather. So that was a little bit of a culture shock.
So for our international listeners, San Diego is a city in Southern California that's almost in Mexico. Like, you know, you can drive over the Mexican border in a very short time. So they don't have what we would consider real winter there.
Yes, there was no winter whatsoever. It did rain one time, and all the people of San Diego were talking about it for weeks of the one time it rained. They normally get the sun and the very warm weather. Yeah, and then so we, over Christmas, found a very good deal on a condo in St. Louis, which is where my family's from. And since we knew, we wanted to kind of check out St. Louis as well and see if this would ever be a place we would want to live, since I do have family here. Mm-hmm. We decided to get the condo and kind of use it as a home base for our travels. So currently we're getting settled into the condo and planning on going to Europe to continue the travels as soon as we get settled in here.
Cool.
Nice. Okay. I've been wondering, and I think some of our listeners will be too, can you tell us a little bit about the logistics of how you work when you're on the road? So what setup did you use for the portable office, and what do you miss the most? Like, do you like lug a large monitor in your suitcase or or do you just work on your laptop, and what kind of hardware do you have, that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was very worried about that because since I do genealogy translations, I work with what's called the old German script. It's this old type of handwriting that Germans wrote in up until World War II. Mm-hmm. And so in order to read the script, I need a big monitor. I need to be able to really zoom in on those letters and that handwriting. So I was very worried about that. But I had actually spent a month working from Italy the year before. And for that trip, I got a portable monitor, a 16-inch little portable monitor. That came with a stand, and if you like, I can give you the link for it to put in the show notes if you
want.
Yeah,
that would be great. That'd be great.
It's great. So it just comes with a little stand, a little travel bag, and then it's 16 inches. So and it's actually very light. So I knew I could use that, but again, it's not the same as your real big monitor that you'd have at home. So what we tried to do is find co-working spaces. Are you both familiar with those, or mm-hmm. do you want me to explain?
I'm right now. Yeah.
Sorry. Okay.
I do it sometimes one-off, but Corinne always works in a co-working space. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we that was actually like a big requirement for us in all the cities we went to. We would look for our Airbnb. We would make sure the Airbnb was very central because obviously we didn't have a car, so we wanted to be able to walk everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then we made sure it was close to a co-working space so we could actually work from the co-working space instead of from the Airbnb.
So for the monitor part, at all the co-working spaces, then did they offer you a monitor, or is that sometimes not, or do you pay extra for that, or do they have them or not have them?
That was like a big worry for me. So before we moved to the next city, I would always find our co-working space and I would write them an email asking if they had monitors. And mm-hmm. if they didn't, I would try to find a different one that did.
Okay.
Now, most of them only had a couple, which stressed me out a little bit because, like I said, I can't really work very well without the monitor. So I would get up very, very early and try to be the first person to the co-working space every day so I could make sure to get the monitor mm-hmm. That I wanted. So that was definitely a little bit of a stressor for me, but it did turn me into more of a morning person.
And then, like you said, maybe once or twice if you weren't there it would be okay, but you don't want to do that every day or whatever, right?
To the co-working space?
No, like if you didn't get the monitor one day, perhaps it might be okay, but you try to get there early most times to get it.
Right. Yeah. Usually I would always bring my portable monitor with me just in case I didn't get it. So I would always have something to work with. Mm-hmm. But usually most co-working spaces had anywhere from 3 to 12. So usually I didn't have a problem getting it as long as I got there mm-hmm. Pretty early.
Is there any other kind, I'm just curious, is there any other kind of, I don't know, special hardware that you have, or you have your laptop, or do you have like always have a headset, or I don't know, whatever, just, you know.
Yeah, so I have my laptop with me, and I actually have, I've developed carpal tunnel, which I'm sure a lot of translators can relate to. Mm-hmm. So I have a special keyboard. I have one of those ergonomic keyboards that's actually separated and kind of tilted. Mm-hmm. And I always bring that with me as well. And that actually folds up very nicely too. It's two parts and I can fold it up and put it in my backpack. So that was a huge find for me, to find something that can be so portable as well.
I actually have a question about your backpack. And the reason I have a question about that is that I just, in the last couple of months, I got a new laptop that I use in conjunction with my other laptop that's set up in a docking station at home. And so I got the other one because it's a lot bigger than my my old one. It's 17 inches and I really like it, but I had a really hard time finding a backpack or some kind of bag for it that was big enough and that protected it. So with all of that stuff, you know, what did you think about the bag, or does that come to mind, or anything that you want to tell us about your bag for it?
Honestly, it was just a hand-me-down bag that I stole from my husband. I don't even know what brand it is or any of that. It was just it might have been North Face, but I'm not positive. It's just a nice big backpack that had one of the a little compartment for your laptop in the back section, mm-hmm. and then two big compartments altogether. But I could let you know afterwards.
Everything you need for your little office that's in there.
Yeah, and honestly, like the things I needed weren't very big. Like I said, my keyboard folds up very small. The portable monitor is 16 inches, so that slides right in there. And I was just able to carry everything with me every day.
And then the portable keyboard, you said it's ergonomic, but it's a full-size keyboard, right? Like it has the number lock and all that kind of thing? Or
yes, it's a full-size keyboard. It just splits into Two parts.
Okay. Just curious, because sometimes, you know, when I'm sure when other people travel too, I think, okay, I sacrifice for the smaller keyboard, but then it's annoying because I can't do like every single thing on it, you know?
Right. So, no, so I don't have that problem. Yeah. No, and it saved my wrist as well. And I don't have any more pain in my wrist. So it's been a huge help.
Maybe you can send us the model of that too for the show notes and we can put
that
up.
Yeah, sure, I'd love to.
So, okay, great. Well, thank you.
And I think one thing to say from the co-working standpoint, because I've worked at co-working offices now, like going on 6 years, and I am such a huge fan of them, is it really opened my eyes to the fact that a lot of co-working offices are up for that sort of impromptu part-time thing, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. Katie. I mean, some are not, but just as an example, years ago when my daughter was littler, she did a camp at the Denver Zoo, which is like a 40-minute drive from our house. And so I didn't really want to sit in a cafe all day trying to work while she was there, but I also didn't want to do 2 round trips and come home to work. So I found a co-working office near the Denver Zoo and just asked if I could pay for 1 week. And they said, you know, sure, no problem. And I just think, to me, it really enlightened me that, for example, if I took an extended trip to visit family members where I wanted to work part of the time, I would definitely look into a local co-working office if I wanted to get out of the house and work. So I think for anyone considering doing that, don't assume that a co-working office is going to want like a 6-month commitment or, you know, something huge like that. That I think if you explain your situation, a lot of places are up for a temporary type of arrangement.
Actually, I have a comment on that too. So I never actually, well, as some of you know, the listeners and Corinne knows, I'm originally from Anchorage, Alaska. So I usually go up there a couple times a year. And my mother is, you know, not the generation, internet generation. So for decades, like I would go up there and there would be no internet. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And I would be going to all these coffee houses. And then, I don't know, I always make a joke and say there's no competition up there. So all of the internet was crappy, you know, because if you went to one cafe, it was just as bad as the next. It wasn't like they were trying to compete with the quality of their internet, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I never crossed my mind. And I might look at that on my next trip. Mm-hmm. There is internet at our house now, but I was thinking, you know, like you said, Karen, I never even crossed my mind to go to try to find a co-working space in Anchorage, mm-hmm. which I'm sure there is one. So thanks for that tip.
Sure.
Yeah. And for us, it was just a very nice way to meet people since we were, you know, new to the city and didn't know anyone. Mm-hmm. It was nice to go to a co-working space for the 6 weeks to 2 months and kind of feel like we had a community. And in San Diego, we actually got invited to the co-working space's Christmas party, which was so nice. As you know, normally,
being in high school or whatever.
Yeah. You know, normally since, you know, I have my own company and work by myself, I don't normally get to have a Christmas party. So it was very nice and just kind of gave us a sense of community that we wouldn't have otherwise had.
Yeah, cool. So Katie, another thing I wonder if you could tell us about is getting paid. So for example, I am desperately trying to nudge all of my clients toward electronic payments, but some still resist my best efforts and mail a paper check. So how are you dealing with that? And I guess also with just paper correspondence in general?
Mm-hmm. That's definitely been a challenge. So I am glad to hear that it's not just my clients, that it's other people's clients as well.
I work banking.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yes. Well, I work in genealogy, which means I have a lot of clients who are retired. Mm. And I just kind of assumed, you know, since a lot of them tell me they don't feel as comfortable with electronic payments. So what I do is, when we started traveling, I took the check option off of my payments, my payment options, and I said, these are my options. You can do PayPal. I do PayPal, Venmo, or Zelle bank transfer, which is a bank transfer within the U.S., and I just gave them those options. However, I would get the occasional, I don't feel comfortable with any of those. Can I send you a check? At that point, I would write back saying, I'm trying to move away from checks, but if that's the only option you feel comfortable with then. And I would have them send checks to my mom's house in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. She was very kind and was my secretary for the year. Mm-hmm. Cool. So that was kind of a worst case scenario. I had one address where checks could be sent to and then collected them when I was there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
That's kind of like what I did actually, Corinne, related to that. Well, that was back in 2012, but when I was in France that time for the half the year, I had my neighbor do it. I felt kind of bad because it is a little more work than you think it's going to be. At least for me.
Yeah, it is.
I still live there. It's getting all my mail. But yeah, it's kind of an annoyance, especially in the U.S. that we have to do that. But I did have her get checks, and I actually gave her my stamp, and she would stamp stuff for me, and then she would deposit it. But you have to be able to find someone who's willing, either paid or for free, to do that for you.
Mm-hmm. Right. And something else that I found that was really helpful is with the U.S. Postal Service, you can sign up for an email that shows you all the mail that is getting delivered.
Oh.
So I was able to sign up to see all of my mom's mail, actually. But I could see then when a check arrived for me, and I could mark it down on my project manager spreadsheet.
Cool.
Yeah, I get that too. It's cool because I think they scan it anyway, and I think somebody in the post office had the bright idea, like, well, we scan it anyway, we might as well do the service, and you can see everything that is coming to your mailbox.
Yeah, so that was very helpful.
So it sounds like it's, overall, like, it's super fun and things are going well, but we want you to give us some of the best and the worst aspects of digital nomad life so far.
There's a lot.
It's just us and our 1,500 listeners. You can tell us the truth.
So we want to have the good parts, but also the bad parts for people to make their decisions. They want this life or not.
Definitely. Yeah, I actually wrote a blog post about this called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly of a Digital Nomad Life. So I thought about it a lot. I'll start off with the worst so we can end on a good note for this question. Probably the hardest thing was doctor appointments and things like that. I had a tooth problem that started in Colorado. So it started in our first official stop. And it persisted through every single stop so far. So I've been to the dentist in Denver, Oregon, San Diego, and St. Louis, all for the same problem.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's just very frustrating because you have to start over each time. You have to tell him why you're there.
You're like cold calling a dentist and saying, basically, I'm in town temporarily and I have this issue. Is there any way I could come in and get it looked at?
Right, exactly. Wow. And then, you have to pay too. You have to pay for the initial consultation, which you wouldn't have had to do if you were with the same dentist. So that's probably been the hardest.
Well, also, I was thinking with dental, it's probably harder than, like, if it was some kind of not too awful medical thing you could go to in the U.S. for other people. You could go to an urgent care, but it's like, it's probably harder to kind of find an urgent dentist too.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, luckily in Oregon, I happened to meet a dentist at a friend's house we were at, the manager's house. that just worked out really well for me, but normally you don't get that lucky. So that's probably been the hardest, is kind of things like that, trying to, find your doctor, find your dentist, especially if you're having an issue. Mm-hmm. Another thing is you don't have a lot of things with you. So we really got rid of almost everything when we were in Boston, and we had two suitcases per person to take with us. Mm-hmm. And we were planning on only going to warm places. So really trying to, do Denver in the summer and then San Diego. And eventually we'd love to go to Hawaii if that works out. But because San Diego didn't work out at the time we thought, we ended up in Oregon. And Oregon gets very cold at the end of October and the beginning of November.
So you're in Oregon with like flip-flops and shorts.
Yeah. Pretty much, yes. I had one pair of tennis shoes and like two sweaters. And so it's a little bit embarrassing. Like the new friends we were making, I'm just wearing the same sweater over and over.
Everything you own every day.
Exactly, yes. And I just felt like I could never wear like nice earrings because I didn't have any cute boots or anything. I was just wearing my tennis shoes all the time, my sneakers. So I just, that's just so kind of superficial, but those are the kind of things that you don't really think about that kind of affect you when you're living on the road. Mm-hmm. And other things like that, different Airbnbs would have different types of things. So like one Airbnb would have like a blender, but then the next wouldn't. So I would miss like making smoothies, or when I actually had to go to physical therapy in Denver too for another problem I was having. And the physical therapist asked if I had a foam roller at home and a mat. And I said, well, I used to own those things, but I gave them all away. So just kind of missing your stuff, I would say, is, something that's difficult. Mm-hmm. And
if you're not like a, I'm more on the Marie Kondo end of the spectrum than the hoarder end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Just when you think of like a hole punch piece of construction paper.
Exactly.
Right. Just little small things that would you easily have at hand. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Even our
random, like a lemon juicer. You know what I mean? Right.
Well, I was thinking too that you don't want to collect stuff either, because then you're moving on to the next place. So you don't want to necessarily like, oh, because sometimes when I go on vacation, I think, oh, if I forget XYZ, I can always buy it. But you don't want to be buying a bunch of extra stuff like that, because then you're stuck with it.
Hauling exactly. It for a year. Yeah.
Yeah, our Airbnb in San Diego didn't have any Tupperware, so we would try to cook so we weren't eating out all the time, and then try to take it to the co-working space the next day, but we would have no Tupperware at all. So I found like a little canister with sugar packets in it and tried to squeeze our pasta into that and take it to lunch.
You're like eating spaghetti out of a Ziploc bag.
Pretty much. <yeah. laughs> So you get very creative. And then
I was going to ask, related to that, did you feel like you eat out more because of that, or you really make a conscious effort to make things, like eat out sometimes and make things in the Airbnbs, or how does that work?
I mean, I think we definitely did eat out more than we probably should have, because we wanted to explore the city we were in. We did try to cook at home as well, but I would say we ate out more than we would have if we'd been back in Boston, just because we wanted to kind of, you know, see the different restaurants the area had to offer. So, we didn't have to, but that was just something we enjoyed rather than eating in all the time. Great. And then
what's the good
probably
part?
The hardest. Yeah. One more hard thing. I was worried about making friends. We're both very, my husband and I are both very extroverted, and we both like to, you know, meet people and go out with people. And I was very worried that if we were just in a place for 6 weeks to 2 months, nobody would want to be friends with us, because they would realize, you know, we're just going to be leaving. Right. Yeah, exactly. And I actually had my best friend tell me, she goes, no offense, but I wouldn't be friends with you. So, but that actually was the complete opposite than what we expected. Everyone was so nice in every place. Everyone included us in everything. We met people at the co-working space. In most places, we knew at least one acquaintance, a friend of a friend or an actual friend. And they just really went above and beyond in every place to make us feel welcome. So that was a really positive surprise.
Cool.
Yeah. And then the good things, or lots of good things. the best part about it was just seeing the country. I lived in Austria for 4 years, and I've seen a lot of Europe, but I'd never really seen much of America. So for me, it's just been so eye-opening to get to see all these different cities and all these different parts of America with their little subcultures. I was so surprised when we got to Denver from Boston. I had such a culture shock, which I didn't expect. Boston, you know, people are a lot more reserved, and strangers don't really tend to talk to each other on the streets. Whereas
you get to Denver, and
yeah, it was great.
You got some spinach in your teeth, and by the way, I like your scarf. Well,
exactly. But it was a huge culture shock coming from Boston. Like, why is the cashier asking me about my day? But it was great, though. I mean, I'm originally from the Midwest, so that was my natural personality that I've been suppressing for the last the last 4 years in Boston. So that was great.
When we moved here from Boston, my daughter was like 10 weeks old. And one of the first days that we were here, I went to open a bank account, and they kept my daughter at the customer service desk.
That was funny.
My welcome to Colorado moment, that the customer service woman was like, oh, you don't need to take her with you. You know, just leave her with I could see her the whole time, but that was the moment that I thought, like, wow, this is really, really different, where they keep your baby at the customer service counter at the bank while you go sign paperwork. So.
Very friendly and welcoming. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then just kind of, like I said before, meeting new people. We've just met so many different people throughout our time in each city. When we are in Bend, my husband and I usually speak German with each other, because most of our relationship started in Austria. And yeah, it's good for my German too to stay in practice. But so we were talking in German at the co-working space in Bend, Oregon, and this guy came up to us and asked if we were speaking German. We said, yeah. And he said, oh, I thought so, because my wife is from Austria. So it turns out that these two people were like us in reverse, an American guy and an Austrian girl, whereas we have my Austrian husband and an American girl. So,
oh, that's so cool.
We got to, it was so cool. And we, they had just moved to back to America. So we got to, they invited us out to dinner and, you know, we just got to have a great night with them talking about all these things that, you know, only people who have gone through visa processes and moving to different countries can understand. So.
And the whole like intercultural relationship thing. And
Definitely. Right. We had a lot of laughs at our annoyances with, with each other's cultures.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So that we just kind of like meeting people like that. Like, it's just been so great to get to, you know, run into all these people who we wouldn't have gotten to meet if we'd stayed in Boston. So I'd say definitely the people and then just the excitement of exploring new cities. You know, you just feel so alive when you get to see all these new things. And we've just really enjoyed kind of that excitement and that novelty.
That's cool.
I mean, I think that's good to hear about, like you said, it was one of your fears, but then it turned out to be a really great people experience. That's fun to hear that, you know, because I can see how it could be isolating, like you said, just moving around from city to city, but your experience and how you guys got out there and stuff wasn't like that at all. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was definitely a really positive surprise, and I was really happy about that.
Awesome. So to close things out, I wonder if I could ask you a little bit on the digital nomad mindset, and specifically how to stay productive while still giving yourself the time to experience these amazing places. So I'll be honest and say, to me, that's my challenge. Like I said, my husband and I did a year backpacking across Asia right after we got married. But we didn't work at all. And my family travels for about a month to 2 months every summer. But to be honest, I really kind of struggle to get into the work mindset without all my usual work stuff with me and without a permanent place to work and an irregular schedule. So like as my daughter, who's now a junior in high school, so that's 16 for, she has this year and one more year of high school for non-US listeners. As she gets closer to leaving home, I'm more intrigued by the digital nomad possibilities. But I think I also struggle with the idea that I'd, in a way, rather just save up money and then go for as long as I can afford to not work. So am I just getting old or flexible or how do you deal with that, Katie?
I think it's just exactly like you said, it just completely depends on your mindset. So the two of us went into this year with the mindset that we were going to be working. It wasn't vacation. It was just working and living in a different city. And the co-working spaces also really helped. We would get up each day, go to the co-working space from, you know, 8 or 9 to 5 or 6 and just kind of tried to keep to a regular schedule.
Co-working to, for men. I think that's the whole moral here.
I was thinking as you were asking the question, Karine, I was thinking it sounds like you guys do make your own schedule. I mean, you make a structure.
We do. We're very, yeah. I mean, that's honestly probably something that I need to work on. Like I am very type A, very structured and very, very focused. And I could probably cut myself more slack than I do. Like, I think both of us are very, okay, we have to work, you know, all these hours and we have to, you know, we're here to work, et cetera, et cetera. But I think, you know, when you're in a new city, you can give yourself some time to kind of explore and relax a little and maybe give yourself that Friday afternoon off. So as we go into this next part of our travels, you know, I do want to stay focused and keep working, but also, you know, allow myself to take a Friday afternoon off if we can, you know, have a fun activity or something like that.
Cool.
Yeah, that was super interesting. I don't know. Do you have any other questions you want to ask Karine or?
I don't know. I was thinking that while Katie was talking, but I think that you pretty much covered it because I think our listeners are interested in both kind of the digital nomad as a theory, you know, like what might they do if they wanted to hit the road? And I think especially the fact that you have combined working pretty much full time, because I think it's like, it's the exception. The only reason my husband and I could afford to do that, honestly, is because we went to extremely inexpensive countries. So we went
that helps,
to,
yes.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So we went to, you know, Thailand and Nepal and places like that that cost a fraction of what it would cost to do such a year in, you know, the US and Europe. And I think also covering the logistics of how you, you know, how you actually go about working on the road is super helpful. So I don't know, I just hope that you'll keep us updated on,
yeah.
on how to go.
It's inspiring too, like you said, that you actually, you're doing it successfully where you are working. So what for me is interesting about that is that it's sustainable. Instead of me thinking, okay, I have to save up $30,000 or, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe I want to save $30,000 anyway, but I mean, the idea that you're just doing it as part of your normal routine. And so you can do it because you're just doing it as part of your normal work routine. So.
Yeah, and we're very lucky that, I mean, we don't have anything tying us down right now. We don't have kids yet. We didn't own a house. So we have jobs where we can do it. So we're lucky in that regard that kind of everything was working in our favor for that. And it just also helped to kind of have goals with what we wanted to do with work as well. Like I make monthly goals for what I wanted to accomplish each month. And that also kind of helped me to stay on track. You know, for October, I want to do this. For November, I want to do this. So that kind of helped me with the structure as well. But it's been a lot of fun, and I enjoy my work and I enjoy traveling. So I'm really glad that I've gotten to combine the two.
Yeah, well, thanks again for telling us how you're living the dream. You're living the dream.
trying.
Yeah. I know the listeners found it really interesting. So if any of you would like to view the show notes or leave a comment on this episode, you can do that at our website, which is speakingoftranslation.com. And as a reminder, if you'd like to receive every single episode of Speaking of Translation directly in your podcast feed, listeners, you can subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, thanks, Katie, and thanks to all of our listeners. So as a reminder, our guest for this episode has been Katie Schober. She's a German to English translator, currently living and working on the road as a digital nomad. Katie's professional website is sktranslations.com. Her blog is aculturapiece.com, and we'll put both of those links in our show notes so that we can continue following Katie's adventures around the world. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you in a future episode.